Welcome to Innovation in Your Ears. This series follows the founders and businesses on the Level Up Accelerator program. I'm Charlie.
I'm Olu, and today you're going to hear from Joe and Simon from Pi Technologies. You're going to hear all about their journey, their business, and what's next for them.
All right, my name's Joseph Roberts, and I am the co-founder and CEO of Pi Technologies.
And I'm Simon Pye-Williams. I'm also the co-founder and CMO of Pi Technologies.
Awesome. So tell the listeners a bit about Pi Technologies. What is it? What do you do? Who are your customers?
Pi Technologies is a language data company. What we do is we use language data to provide sort of scalable language solutions for different problems. So our first solution is Scores.io. It's an online language learning platform that aims to sort of service underserved and minority languages.
And so tell us a bit about that product in detail. Like, is that ready? Is it out there? Who's using it? Is it being built?
So we're still in the development stage. We hope to have a prototype out soon. We're looking at using that prototype then to get beta testers, show to investors, and you know, within our network, to get feedback on that. So then, obviously, when we take it to market, that it's a suitable product. Our target audience for that is B2B2C. So that means business to business, a customer. So we're targeting institutions like councils or government bodies or schools, because of the way our platform is designed and developed. It means that we can scale the number of languages that we have on our platform, and it also allows us to have any language to and from another language that we have on our platform. So for the first time, you know, we may be the only course to go through the medium of Welsh to learn, Swahili or wow. Mandarin or something like that.
Okay, so the aim is to allow people to learn through their native tongue rather than, I guess I've generally looked at courses through English. Mm-hmm. Are there other things out there where you could learn through your native tongue?
So there is stuff, but the market's quite patchy when it comes to it. So I'll give an example with Duolingo. So obviously Duolingo is the largest sort of language learning platform. The vast majority of its courses are only available in English because that's where they feel most of their users will be coming from. But there are, you know, if you speak Indonesian, you can learn English, but you can't learn French or anything else. Right. If you speak French, maybe you get like three or four other languages, but...
So are people who speak Indonesian, are they learning French, for example, through English?
Through English, which is very...
That's crazy in this day and age.
Mm. Especially when there's hundreds of millions of people doing that. I think that I would say that, obviously, with English, there's only maybe about 1 or 2 billion people who have some ability in that language, and that really doesn't mean that they're comfortable in it. But it just seems to... It's unacceptable to us that we find ourselves in 2023 now, I think. And people who speak Hindi, you know, a language spoken by 400 or 500 million speakers, can't get access to, you know, learning German or anything unless they learn English first. It seems incredibly inefficient to have to learn a language and then learn another language through the language that you've learned.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So tell us a bit more. So you said you know there's a lot of data involved in this. Explain sort of in layman's terms, I guess, where that comes in and what's the benefit of that.
Yeah, so there's two places it comes in. First of all is when we're making the courses, and second of all is the way we provide the courses. So what we try to do is we try to automate creating the courses basically by collecting lots of data, processing and putting it out. The other way is that because we've analysed how the language is structured, so to speak, we know what words are common and what words aren't, we know what grammar's common and what grammar's not, we kind of use the statistics there to... work out an unoptimal way through learning a language.
Okay, and then can people utilise that data even if they don't need a platform, for example?
Yeah, so...
Presumably you've got a wealth of data there and knowledge that's valuable to...
Yeah, I think...
In all sorts of scenarios.
How many languages do we have, Joe?
So we've got about 2,400 and something languages, but they're all... That data's at lots of different levels. So there's about 2,400 languages, but... You know, some of it is ready to go with a course. There's enough data for that, and some of it is a bit more patchy. And you're right as well. Actually, that's sort of how we've pivoted recently. The company originally was just the language learning platform, but actually the data that we used to create the language learning platform, we kind of identified it as being actually quite valuable in of itself and useful in other ways as well. An example of this is that we currently have a working on a partnership with Animated Tech, who do VR. Now they're building a VR learning like experience, right? But because we've got all of the vocabulary and grammar for the languages they want to show, actually we can use that data to then help them build out their experience. And we can do it with other things as well. You know, if you want weather reports, for example, we just connect our data to the weather data, and then actually we can provide weather reports in lots and lots of different languages.
And it's accurate the way it's...
Yeah, it's very low ambiguity. Yeah.
So that's amazing. So I guess it's kind of making information and data accessible to people, in A, making it more accessible to people full stop, but yeah. B, those who maybe can understand English still have the choice then to have it in their native tongue as well.
This is the mission of the company, really. I think that, you know, given where we are and we can create these amazing tools like GPT-3, you know, Wikipedia is a fantastic resource for English speakers. We have all these amazing tools, but they only really apply to people who speak English, Spanish, Mandarin, Russian, maybe French, maybe German. But it just seems mad to me that we have all the information and we have all of the data, but all of these kind of services and products that are online is only really good for people who speak these large languages. And it kind of contributes more to the language death currently going on globally. You know, out of the 7,000 or so languages that are about right now, half of them are endangered, and about a quarter of them will be extinct by the end of 2050, I think. And it's kind of not acceptable to me, or as I'd like to say, that, you know, we have all the information, but nobody's just put two and two together and made all the amazing things on the internet, you know, things like learning courses and education and weather reports, etc. They just haven't made them accessible to people who don't speak these large languages.
Yeah, sounds like a really good problem to tackle, and
yeah.
Sounds like you're onto a good solution. So, I'm intrigued. How did you guys meet? You know, where's the idea come from? Did you grow up together? What's the story?
Yeah, so me and Joe met at Bangor University doing our masters. I was doing business and marketing, and Joe, you were doing
international business.
Just we had a few modules together. You know, noticed that, sat together at the time, because I was learning German, I think, and obviously I was going through learning a new language for the first time again. I can speak English and Welsh fluently.
So presumably you're learning that through English, not through Welsh?
I was learning that through English, yeah, not through Welsh. But then even then, it was, you know, because of the relationship of German and Welsh, I was noting some similarities in the languages. But even then, my experience of learning a language, I hadn't done it since I was in primary school, secondary school. So obviously I was using apps, you know, freely available online for the first time, and not having a teacher there to help me go through that. And then obviously speaking to Joe, who humbly can speak a dozen languages, but probably wouldn't say he's fluent in any of them, just conversationally, you know, was giving me all these tips and points that I was, you know, having as a learning German. And obviously a lot of the things that resonated with me had resonated with Joe for years in all these different languages. And through that, you know, as we were, you know, getting into the nitty-gritty of our business course, we decided to write out a plan, you know, as you do, just like, why not give it a go, see how we can monetize this, see if we can actually provide a solution. And from there, it's grown. It started as, you know, just Pi Language Learning as a language learning app, but now it's Language Data Solutions.
So I think the core of the idea came from, like Simon mentioned, I have taught myself lots of different languages to different levels, and if anyone asks me, how many do you speak, I always ask, you know, well, what do you mean by speak? Because the last thing you want to do is say, oh yeah, I speak, I don't know, German, and then they say, oh, what do you think of the, you know, economics of the post-Soviet space, and it throws it way off.
Okay, in how many languages could you have a, you know,
conversation,
a simple conversation?
Simple conversation, probably about 20 or 30.
Okay, so it's fair.
Very, very simple.
He's, languages.
Yeah. He's a polyglot for sure.
I don't like that term either. Multilingual, right? You don't mix roots. So, I feel like I learned Chinese in school, and I lived in China for a year before I went to university. I got a scholarship, so I started learning Mandarin quite early. I learned a bit of Welsh in school and a bit of French in school, but I didn't get very far with them. My French is awful. And when I was learning Mandarin in China, I got to meet other people from around the world as well at quite a young age, and it meant that I kind of like, oh, well, I'll give their languages a go, you know, let's have a bit of a dabble. And it built up and built up and built up until in about 5 years ago, I was in Shanghai and I was like speaking Russian with Russians and Korean with Koreans and Japanese with Japanese speakers. And I was getting lots of opportunities to learn all of these languages. And I kind of saw like a pattern that was shared between all of them. And I thought, well, if there's a pattern shared between all the languages, then maybe that's something that can be, you know, explained or turned into a business plan, right? And I did a bit of research, and the pattern generally is like to do with frequency, basically like some words are really, really common and some words are less common. And no matter how you learn a language, you pick up the common words first. So I thought, you know, can you game that? Can you present the common words to someone early? And yeah, I came up with the idea based on that. And then I came back to Bangor and met Simon. So. Mm.
And you lived happily ever after.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Are you guys still mates?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly.
Of course.
Yeah. Mostly. Depends how angry I am.
Lovely.
No, yeah.
I'm always fascinated by kind of key moments in someone's life as well as the business life, I guess. Talk us through the moment where you went, okay, yes, this is no longer just an idea that we've sort of fleshed out. We're gonna go for this. You know, we're not taking jobs, or we're taking part time jobs, or working weekends. Like, we're gonna, like, how does that work, and how did you? And you know, how did you fund it? How are you covering your costs, etc.? It's a major moment for most people, and it can be the point at which a lot of people don't take an idea forward. I'm keen as to how that sort of panned out for you guys.
I think the exact moment probably would be different between us, obviously, because we both had slightly different experiences with the business. I think my moment actually was probably when I was in China, and I was like, I can't not do this.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I'm going to go back. I'm going to come back to Wales. I'm going to do an MBA to make sure I give it a good go. You know what I mean? I don't want to just jump in blind and waste the idea. But I think it was probably in February in China. I was sat at my desk with the marketing stuff, and I was just thinking, I can't do this forever. I want to do something on my own. That's what I want to do. I think that was probably it. Darcy, when was you?
Yeah, so for me, I wasn't in China with you then. But it was, I think, towards the end of the Masters, because I'd gone away, and when I come back, I was finishing off my dissertation, and I handed it in, I think it was beginning of March 2020, which obviously is quite a specific, you know, point in time for when COVID came around. Mm. But before that, you already started, we already registered the business, and we already had some plans out, and it was our intent to obviously work on it fully then. But then, as obviously, you know, the economic situation was happening then and remote working and everything, it made sense then to fully jump in. And you know, for a few months then, I could already see the value in the data that had not been done with any other company before, and how, you know, whether it's just course creation always had to be done manually through tutors and stuff. So in terms of a technical aspect, and then obviously Joe's knowledge in the language space, you know, I could see for months that obviously there is a diamond in the rough here, but it wasn't until then when COVID kicked in when actually I was like, right, let's make this full time. Joe's idea initially.
The diamond in the rough.
Yeah.
Oh well, no, well, I think
it's still pretty rough. So,
well, it is still rough, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, there is value in the language data and what we're, you know, in the different solutions. No one else is doing it the way that we're doing it, and obviously it's very scalable. So I think, you know, for the whole time we're in uni and talking about it and making out this plan, it was, you know, more boxes were being ticked and it was just becoming clearer in our heads. And then it was just, you know, in that point in March 2020, it was like, why not go for it now?
So three years maybe in so, you know, obviously a lot of founders set up as individual founders or as two co-founders or more. How have you found that journey going into it together? And you know, presumably there's been ups and downs. How have you managed that?
It has been a bit of a roller coaster. Our timing was fantastic. you know, setting up. Oh yeah, well, so you know, we had a good couple of months where we weren't, you know, locked in our houses for 2 years. It has been lots of ups and downs. We've had, you know, investors coming and going, interested, non-interested. That's been a lot of our ups and downs, mm-hmm, investment definitely related. We've been trying to go for investment very early on, actually, but it was just difficult. Right? I think it's been good having someone there who can kind of help mediate those ups and downs, because I've noticed that, you know, different founders, they tend to have their own sort of like ups and downs as a sort of cycle, if that makes sense. So, you know, I go sort of 2 months up, 2 months down. It's good to have somebody else there to kind of pick up the slack if I'm really not feeling it, and vice versa, I'd hope.
You probably just get exhausted, you know, the round goes on, and mentally as well.
Yeah.
You need those breaks periodically.
Yeah, definitely. I think like burnout is a real thing. And, absolutely, you know, especially when, you know, you own part of the business, you know, there's a lot more responsibility on you then to make it work and, you know, get that paycheck home. But I think, yeah, definitely in terms of being co-founders, you know, there has been roller coasters individually and together, but I think we have balanced each other out really more than anything.
What would you say to people in so, you know, maybe they're doing a master's right now, what would you say to them if they're thinking about going into a new business venture with 1, 2, 3 other people? What would you say to them to think about carefully in terms of becoming co-founders?
I think two things. First of all, is you have to really know your own motivations for doing it. I think you've got to be either obsessed with the idea or really backed into a corner and you can't think of anything else you could possibly do, right? You've got to really know your motivations for doing it and what you want to get out of this. I see this with businesses where they set up and then suddenly it's a completely different beast to what you originally started off with. And some people, that's fine, you know, if it's what they're hoping for, then no worries. But if you find that suddenly you're working in a company that, you know, you don't really understand anymore, for example, I've seen that happen a couple of times with the other startups, not the established ones, let's say, but when we were in the sort of student startup space, people would set up a company and then it would change completely, and then they wouldn't have that motivation anymore, you know. And the other bit of advice I'd say is get really clear with how you plan to get to funding. So we started off quite early, going for an early sort of pre-seed round, right? The investor who we were speaking to wasn't really, she wasn't that interested, I think. It was quite an early stage, so, you know, fair enough. But then we kind of rejected investment. We're like, right, we're going to build it ourselves. We're going to this, that, and the other across through COVID. And then we spent, you know, 2 years trying to build the thing without speaking to investors that much. And then now it's come back round to the point where, like, actually, we do kind of want investors to make sure that we can really get to grips with the opportunity to scale. And I think us yo-yoing a bit has taken some time. So I think, you know, if there's an advice for someone who's looking at setting up a company, is be really clear about how you're wanting to fund this. If you want to build it yourself and make the money yourself, stick to it. If you want to go for investment, keep looking for investment. Don't yo-yo. Yeah,
Something similar, I would say, if you're going to do it by yourself, make sure, you know, you've got at least people there that can help you along the way, that you've got the right network and stuff. Because doing it by yourself, you're never really doing it by yourself, because you're always going to have to...
You've got to call on help.
Absolutely.
You've always got a support network.
Yeah, and, you know, they might not necessarily be co-founders, but, you know, they'll be, you know, a technical lead, or it'll be someone, you know, that can help you get investment or whatever, right? Mm. And if you are, you know, bringing in anyone like that, then obviously you've got to make sure that they're on the same page as you. Because if you are, you know, if the company does become bigger than you imagined, and, you know, it's very possible with someone with more experience, you know, they can help you, you know, bring that to life, really. And they can, I think that, like, it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to know, like, you don't know all the skills. I think that's really important to think, like, actually, if we're doing this, marketing is going to be a big thing, and so I need someone to help do a website or develop a product. And you might not, you know, you might have to give some equity away, you might have to take a loan out and stuff like that, but as long as you've got to have a plan as well, I think. Don't go in and then just think, like, right, now what's the next step? You know, try and plan it as much as you can, but, you know, you can't just plan forever. You have to eventually just get on with it.
You have to do stuff.
And then, you know, just surround yourself with people that can support you on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So Talk us through what the year or two ahead holds for you guys, for Pi Technologies. What the big focus is?
Well, we're currently in the process of our first round.
Okay, yeah. So you've got to that point now. You're clear. You understand that you need funds. Want funds, mm-hmm. and presumably smart money. So the right people coming in to support that growth.
We've known for a while that we've been needing funding to scale, because we were on the Level NESA accelerator program here in MSparc, and that was super useful. It highlighted sort of where we were as a company quite clearly, and sort of the opportunity to scale, and sort of how much cash that we would actually need in order to get that scaling done properly. I think that really helped us out, and I think we're super clear that we need investment, sort of pre-seed, seed investment, to finish off the product and build traction. So that's the plan, basically, for the next year, 18 months, maybe 2 years, is to get the product built, get the investment in, build up the team a little bit, see, because we've got a couple of gaps in the team, right, and build up that traction, and then go for another round, probably at the end of that period.
If you could start another business tomorrow, money and time was no issue, what would that business be?
Simon? It would have to be something with AI. I think that's a really exciting space right now. I think, you know, what that's going to lead to, if it was obviously, you know, unlimited time and money, I think that will just really help all sorts of industries and sectors. You know, imagine what, you know, AI could do for the NHS or something like that. You know, what that could do for, you know, people in care. You know, there's lots of things that, you know, it can obviously help the future generations, but it also, like, needs to think about, you know, all generations, really. We're all going to grow old one day, and so obviously you want to make sure that there are, you know, things in place that will, you know, play ping pong with us or something like that, you know, when we're in our 80s in a care home.
Joe?
Honestly, I don't know. To be honest, I'm so focused on the language space that all my good ideas I get go back into this company. So I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know. I quite like barbecue. Set up a little, like, barbecue place. That sounds fun. No, I think I'm quite into calligraphy at the moment, sort of Arabic and Chinese calligraphy. I think a website teaching that would be super handy for lots of people who are learning it, but you know, what's the size of that market? I'm not sure, but if money's not an option,
maybe you can combine forces and have a
AI calligrapher.
There is some interesting stuff going on in that space, by the way. They're trying to work out if AI can work out the aesthetics of Chinese calligraphy.
Wow.
It's very interesting.
So anybody listening who's up for a challenge,
yep,
and interested in Arabic calligraphy,
yep,
come and speak to Joe and Simon.
Yeah.
Maybe just Joe.
So obviously, you know, we've talked a little bit about where it's come from, the pivot, I guess, into being more of a data company than a consumer mm-hmm. platform. We talked a bit about the plans moving forwards. Talk us through kind of, I guess, the big milestones, the traction that you've gained as you've gone through that process.
I think two of the big ones that we've got into really have been through some of the awards that are available for startups in Wales. We're very proud of it, obviously, as a Welsh-based company. We've won the national competition in our hearts. We won the Wales Startup Awards.
Graduate category.
The graduate category.
Okay, awesome.
That was really exciting.
That's pretty early on, you won that, I guess?
I think that was like
November last year, was it?
I think it was about a year and a half into 20, I think it was October 21. And obviously around that period, like, you know, a lot more competitions were happening. So, you know, a lot of them were cancelled over COVID as well. So, you know, we got to go down to Cardiff, you know, we got to network, we got to, you know, meet a, you know, load of new companies and investors, and it was fantastic.
It was really exciting.
Yeah.
And then recently as well, we were the regional winners for Rising Stars. So we're the only North Wales company to get on Rising Stars. It's basically a competition for tech startups that are ready to scale. So all of the sort of criteria for winning that is to be a tech company that is ready to scale and scale big. So they compare all of the other businesses about their potential to scale, and we're the number one in North Wales, so that's great, and also in the top three for all of Wales as well.
Yeah.
And fingers crossed we'll get through to the national level, but we don't find out about that yet.
Just yet. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And then I think a couple of other things was being on the accelerator for, I think it was the first accelerator for MSPAC, the Level Up scheme, or Level NESA. You know, with that, you know, we had a rebrand from Pi Language Learning to Pi Technologies. So that was really nice, really much more appropriate.
That's when you went through that pivot.
Yeah, you know, so went from that language learning app to language data solutions.
Yeah.
And, you know...
It's been really instrumental, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's really helped us, you know, prove that, you know, the how we can scale and all the different companies that we can work with to allow them to scale or be more accessible as we grow as well.
And have you found it helpful, I guess, through all of these different, I guess anything from awards all the way to an accelerator program like Level NESA at MSPARC, how helpful has it been to interact with not just mentors and advisors, but also other companies at different stages and going through different challenges?
Yeah, MSPARC's sort of ecosystem is actually very, very useful as a startup. Because obviously there are companies at different levels within that. You know, some of them have been startups and have scaled up, and we can talk to them. That's super handy. Some of them are just starting out, and we can help them where we can. And some of them are sort of at the same kind of level as us. So it means that so there's a sort of group of people around who you can, you know, run ideas by. You can ask them about what they think about X, Y, and Z. You can say, you know, what do they think of this investor network? Do they know anyone? I think that's been really quite instrumental in getting us as far as we are.
Yeah, completely agree. I think, you know, their advice that they might give, the feedback, you know, is usually out of the box because they're not going to see the whole picture that we might see. But because we see that and have that in our heads all the time, it's really busy. So we might not be able to think of the solution. We've got all these other things to go off. But then someone with experience or a fresh insight, you know, their feedback can actually be like, oh, it's a light bulb moment. And I was like, okay, that's exactly what we needed. And obviously being in this space has given that to us.
Absolutely.
So yeah, really good.
That's awesome. Going back then to people who are thinking of starting a business or maybe are in the early stages of business, obviously accelerator programs, award schemes, things that clearly have been of huge value to you. What one book, if they had to pick one book, what would you recommend that someone read?
Depends on what the person knows and doesn't know. I think a pretty good all-round one is Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. It's a collection of advice and experience from lots and lots and lots of different people from lots and lots of different sort of backgrounds and spheres, like acting or bodybuilding or business people or investment. I think it's just a really good compilation of good advice from clever and successful people. Just that.
One that I read on repeat, Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday. It's just a stoic lesson every day. And I think it provides, you know, strength in that mindset really to, you know, go into this entrepreneurial journey. Otherwise, you know, if you're going to panic about all these things, then you're not really in the right state to be running a business. So I think, you know, that it provides that mental strength.
Big year ahead, looking to raise funds,
yep.
Looking to grow out the team, finalising some of the bits on the product, so that's live,
mm-hmm.
And so starting to build some more strategic partnerships. Mm-hmm. Where can people get in touch to reach out to you individually or the business, whether that's a potential client, investor, or just someone who wants to know a little bit more?
Yeah, so you can find contact details on our website, pitechnologies.io. Also, all our social channels will be of that, PiTech or PiTechnologies, across Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. And yeah, obviously our contact information's on there. Feel free to get in touch.
Also, our personal ones are, we were both on LinkedIn and Twitter as well.
Yeah.
You can find us on there. Just search our names. So Joseph Roberts, J-O-S-E-F Roberts.
And Simon Parry Williams.
Is Joe going to skirt over the fact that he's just joined TikTok?
Yeah, I'm big in Kabul.
Come on, Joe.
Yeah, for a long time I was putting off making a TikTok because, you know, a lot of the content on there is interesting. But recently I've been trying to flex some of my language skills a bit better. Flex, as the Gen Z kids say, I'm trying to flex it.
Showing your age there, mate.
Yeah, I know. I am 30, I'm allowed to. But I've recently started doing videos in Pashto, which is a language in Afghanistan, and I've got about 900 followers from Kabul.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm popular in Afghanistan.
So how can people find you on TikTok?
It's Joseph Pai, so Josephpai. And there's a big picture of me grinning.
We've got it all. Right, best of luck, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll catch up with you later in the year and find out how you get on with the investment round and the product launch.
Yeah, great.
But yeah, thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Remember to follow us on all our social media and the businesses featured in this episode.